This episode of the God and Mental Health podcast is brought to you by Happy Mammoth. I am so excited to tell y'all about this brand because it has been so helpful to me. So I am not in my 20s anymore. And as I'm getting older, I'm really kind of understanding a little bit more about my hormones after having two kids. I'm really understanding like my mood shifts, my fatigue, sometimes my stress throughout the month, especially during those cycles of time before my period. So I recently started researching cycle seeking, and it was so helpful for me because I really kind of began to understand these different changes when I am feeling overwhelmed, when I am feeling tired, when I am feeling like my mood is different. I'm also just experiencing some of those kind of early PMS symptoms of like bloating and gassy and poor sleep and kind of racing thoughts and low mood. And so I started doing some research into cycle syncing and kind of came to understand that our different periods before our cycle change because of our hormones. And so I was thinking about a way to combat this, and Happy Mammoth is a brand that I think is going to be super helpful to some of my audience that might be experiencing some of these things. And so I think a lot of times we kind of associate our different moods with something's wrong with us, or that there is actually something that we're struggling with mental health wise, but not really understanding that as a woman, we naturally have up and down moods because of our hormones. And so for me, if you are someone that's maybe in your mid-20s and you're kind of seeing like during different periods of the month, you're more sad or you're more overwhelmed, this might be a good opportunity for you to maybe supplement and try to combat that with some of the amazing products at Happy Mammoth. So I want to talk to you all about particularly one specific product called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormone changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And it means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. If you're someone that definitely struggles with maybe bloating or maybe sleep or even racing thoughts or low moods, Hormone Harmony would be perfect for you. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order with Happy Mammoth. Just use the code THERAPY at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, HappyMammoth.com. And use the code THERAPY for 15% off today. Now, let's get back to the show. The Therapy is a Christian podcast is all things mental health and Christ. We specifically talk about how mental health and God are merged together to foster growth, healing, and making mental health a normal conversation. I'm your host, Rosin Renee, and welcome to the show. Hello and welcome. You are listening to the Therapy is a Christian podcast. I'm your host, Rosin Renee, and welcome to another episode of the show. And welcome to part two of this amazing episode that I have the opportunity to interview Mrs. Tiffany Burns. We are going to be talking all about money. So we are in part two of the interview where we're going to be going over the real tea about debt, how to pay off debt, financial literacy, and all that. So before we start, just say hey real quick, sis.
Hey, sis. How you doing?
Okay, so we talked a lot in the last episode about money story, how you and your husband got into debt. We kind of even after the interview talked a little bit about y'all's debt. So why don't you even share before we get into talking more about debt, about what was encompassed in y'all's debt that you all paid off?
Yeah, so our debt, I don't even remember if we touched on this part of the in the interview, but my husband and I, when we got married, we didn't have debt. We paid for our wedding in cash. We saved for our down payment for our first house. It's somewhere between having our first house and having our first kid. we racked up a lot of debt really quickly. So it was $91,000 once it was all said and done, right? And so if you want to add that up, we went on one road trip with my daughter and my little Nissan Altima. And I was like, okay, this is not going to cut it. So I traded my Altima in for the third row SUV. Like, I needed the biggest car that I could find. So a lot of that was my car. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was like close to $30,000 in my car. We went and bought a bunch of furniture, appliances for the house. You know, Murphy's Law, right? Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. So when you are living life like on just on edge and not on autopilot almost and not really paying attention, like, think that's when you give yourself a recipe for things to go wrong. And as a new homeowner, there's a lot of things that can go wrong, right? So then we had to replace our HVAC system. So we live in Maryland. It's hot, it's humid, it's muggy, and we needed a whole new HVAC system in our house. So part of it was that. My husband had a previous business that he had some tax debt. And then we ended up getting a personal loan to cover that tax debt. Because if you owe the IRS, it is no joke. Their penalties, their fees, their interest will keep you in debt to them literally for life. So we got a personal loan to pay that off. And I feel like the other ones were maybe just some store cards that I went and just went ham and bought Christmas decorations and stuff for the house and just all kinds of, I call it foolishness, because none of it was strategic. None of it was planned out. It was really just us and me living my best life.
Yeah. Wow. So, and y'all paid that off in how long?
It took us 3 years to pay it off. Right. So it took us less than 2 years to accumulate that debt, but then it took us, 3 years. So I like to tell people that part too, because it didn't take us long to get in it, but it took us longer to get out. Yeah. But we did. We were able to pay it off in 3 years.
That's so good. So no student loans. Like, I thought, no some of the, I thought some of your debt was student loans, but to hear y'all say like none of it was student loans. Mm-hmm. One, because I think so much of the millennial population has student loans. And so When you hear debt or hear about debt, you mostly think of student loans, or you think people have student loans. Listen, here y'all had around $91,000 of no student loans.
Right. And so that's the other part too, because, you know, when people get overwhelmed by their student loans, a lot of times people with student loans have federal loans. Your interest rate is really low. And so even if you have, you know, six figures of student loan debt, your interest rate is low. We were going to get eaten alive by credit card debt if we didn't do something about it, right? Because those interest rates are so high on credit cards and on those personal loans and things like that. So yeah, none of that was student loans. I know that my story comes with a certain level of privilege. So people who, if you're not following me, my husband is white. And so there that comes with a certain level of privilege, right? So he was able to pay his student loans off, you know, a couple years after he graduated, right? And I know that's not the story for most Black women. It takes, as a demographic, it takes Black women the longest to pay off student loans. Mm-hmm. So I know our story comes with a certain level of privilege. Like, you know, again, we paid that debt off in 3 years because my husband is a high earner. He gets a full dollar, right? We know that there is racial and gender wage gaps in this country, right? So I know that this story comes with a certain level of privilege. And so I always like to preface people with that part too, just because I understand that. But yeah, none of the debt that we had was student loans.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get into the juicy tea. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you a little bit of background because I think that this is just super, super good for you to talk about debt. So I think sometimes we have a preconceived notion about debt. And when we're creating a budget, a lot of us, especially like with my family in particular, we live on the bare minimum. Like when I was looking at our budget actually recently, because of all the talk about the recession, I'm always looking at our finances. And I'm the one that'll like talk about and really create the budget. Nico is kind of the one that will make sure we follow it, because even though I can create the budget, I'm the one that will also spend the money. Okay, girl. Yes. So with that being said, when we look at our budget, it's very intentional. And when I looked more recently, we're on the bare minimum of everything. We don't overspend really a lot in a lot of categories. We don't really go out. We don't have cable. We don't have car notes.
We don't have, like, a lot of the things that would be considered debt. We basically are living off of just the regular day-to-day. And what I realized very quickly is that, okay, so our issue is not even really debt. Our issue is really building more, getting more money into the household and really raising the finances. So, but if we're just going to talk about debt in particular, because I know that this is kind of their topic, what are some basic things that we need to know when it comes to debt, especially with learning this? Because this is not something that I guess we've really been taught and really need to understand more, the financial literacy and like all of those things. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the thing with the financial education is I think it's really, really important to make sure that you are involved and your finances are organized in some way, right? You have to have some sort of system. It doesn't have to be an app. It could be an Excel sheet. It could be pen and paper. It doesn't matter, but you have to know what's going on. I feel like a lot of people take an ignorance is bliss approach to their finances in general. And then so they have no idea, you know, how much debt they're in. So like my husband and I, before we started really sitting down and crunching numbers, we had no idea. And what was happening was, you know, we would go out and, you know, open up a credit card and it's just, oh, it's just $100. And the payment, it'll be like $25. So I could take this extra payment, right? And so you're looking at it as how much your monthly, you know, take home pay can absorb. And if you're not using any sort of system, if you're not tracking it, then it's going to be really easy to over leverage yourself and find yourself in a bunch of debt and in a lot of trouble, right? And so it's really important to make sure that you're using some sort of system, that you have your eyes and hands in what's going on in your day-to-day finances and really being aware of that so that you can be proactive with how you approach debt in the future. And I think that's the biggest part of the education piece, is just really having some sort of system and awareness.
So what would you explain to people who maybe don't have a system? What would be some basic things, or what would be some basic maybe apps that they could use that you like, or even like the paper pen system? Like, how would you explain creating a budget?
Yeah, so creating a budget, one of my favorite apps of all time is Mint. It's by Intuit, the creators of QuickBooks and TurboTax. They have a free app that links to your bank account. So it will automatically pull transactions in, so you don't have to take extra time to pull transactions in. It does give you some like trends and things like that, so it'll show you like where you're spending your money. That's one of my like go-tos, especially if you're looking for a free app. There's a couple other ones that are out there that are popular. You Need a Budget. Right now I'm using an app called Monarch that I really like. Their interface is really nice to use, and I like the way that they have everything kind of organized in the app, within the app. So it's pretty user-friendly, but that one is a paid app. If you want to use it, message me on Instagram at The Lotus Legacy, and I have a code that you can use to get a discount.
I'll put it in the show notes so people can use your code for some money. Yeah.
Yep, let's do that. And then, so those are the apps that I would recommend. But the first thing is really, it starts with awareness. Just like anything else that we do trying to improve ourselves, we have to be aware of what's going on. And so many people are afraid to check their bank account. So many people are afraid to look back and see where they're spending their money. And I think that's the most important step, because when you're creating a budget, if you just go off of the strength of what you think you spend, you will be pleasantly or unpleasantly surprised at how much you actually spend. And that's like one of the biggest aha moments that like all of my clients have when we're creating their money management system, is how much they're actually spending. People are really unaware of what is happening in their day-to-day finances. So it's really important to go back and look and see, you know, how much did you spend in restaurants? How much did you spend in food? How much did you spend shopping? Right. And so when you're making your budget going forward, you're using like real numbers, real data to make this budget. And then the second thing that I teach is like, I don't teach about like sacrifice and deprivation and things like that. And so instead of saying, okay, if I spent, you know, $1,000 in restaurants last month, I'm going to only spend $200 this month. We both know that that is not going to work, right? That's not sustainable. That's not a sustainable change. And it's not going to work. So making sure that when you're trying to make edits and make adjustments, that you're doing it in a graceful and sustainable way. Instead of just trying to crash diet your way into fixing your finances, because it's an easy way to just relapse and binge and be worse off than you started. So I hope that was, does that answer your question?
Yeah, and I think it comes with really kind of thinking of trial and error, because the thing about a budget is it definitely has to be tested. It's not something that is just fixed just because you say. Like, I think about us a lot when we make our budget. There are so many things that come up in the month. Like, this month my husband has to pay his car renewal. Well, we don't keep track every year whenever we got to pay his car renewal. We'll just get something in the mail. Or like more recently, I put us on a payment plan for one of Elijah's medical bills. And like, that is something that a couple months ago wasn't necessarily planned out. So it's having to like readjust and move some things around. I also recently got my license. So I have a lot of fees that have recently come up with getting reciprocity in different states and that cost. And so it is something that you have to test out. And like you said, I think one of the biggest things is not avoiding and being aware, which is extremely uncomfortable. And I think, so I want you to talk about what comes up for like clients when they are literally in the midst of feeling the discomfort of like, baby, I don't want to see this debt. I don't want to see all these numbers, because it can be very uncomfortable. It's especially when the numbers are high, and it almost feels like when you're swiping a credit card, it's not a big deal, or it's not a big, it's not like a huge issue until you really see the accumulation of these things play out. So can you talk about what are some of the uncomfortable feelings that come up with that?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely will. I just want to go back to what you were just talking about, you know, the budget being tested, right? So just on average, it takes about 3 months of consistent budgeting for you to even start to feel like you're getting the hang of it. And then, like you said, life will always flow. It will always change. So my favorite type of budgeting is zero-based budgeting. So that means every month I'm giving my money some type of job to do, even if the job is to leave some cushion in my bank account, right? And so it's important to make sure that you do that, so that every dollar, like every dollar has a job, but every month is going to be different, especially as moms, right? Especially as business owners, life is going to continue to happen. And so when you do it that way, it really gives you space to honor whatever season that you're in your life. Yeah, and so one of the things that
talk about zero-based budgeting, because I think, so we use Every Dollar, which is the app for Ramsey, is one we use when we were paying off debt. We used the free version at first. When the first time when we were paying off debt, when we first got married, we did paper and pen. And I will say, I like the app,
baby,
because sitting with my husband every week, going over the transactions, we would write them out line by line. We would calculate penny by penny. It took a lot of time, but it also required both of us to sit down for a long period. The app allows us to have some sort of, both of us can kind of navigate through it. But the other thing I like about the app is it creates a zero-based budget. So talk about a zero-based budget is essentially what it is.
Yeah. So zero-based budgeting, like I said, is like the type of budgeting where you're assigning a job for every single dollar that is coming in. And to ultimately what you want to happen is the money that is coming in and the money that you have planned to spend, or again, like that, the line item to be a cushion. Right. So, but you want to make sure that every single dollar that you have coming in has a job, so that you're as intentional as possible with it. And that's my favorite type of budgeting. One of the other like ways that used to be really popular was like the 50-30-20. So 50% of your income would be for your necessities, 30% would be to your wants, and then 20% will go to savings. The issue with that right now is inflation, right? It is really, really difficult in today's age to get all of your necessities into that 50% category if you don't make a crap ton of money. So, and so it's really discouraging when you're seeing those numbers and you're looking at these percentages and it's way off. So I prefer to do zero-based budgeting for that reason, right? Like, you give yourself that flexibility and that wiggle room, but then you're also being as intentional as possible with your money. I used to use the Every Dollar app. I love the Every Dollar app. I still recommend it to clients who are going to take the time, like women who I know will actually sit down and take the time to enter charges. Because if you're doing the free version of the app, then you have to go in and make sure that you're adding.
Yeah, we pay for it. We pay for like every year. So it's like a yearly expense, but it's not that much. I want to say maybe like $100, but it's worth it because it pulls out our savings. It pulls out all of our transactions, which is great because it allows us to then see who's spending what, how it's been, it's just really, really, really beneficial for us.
Yeah, yeah. That's, and I forgot that they had a paid version. So yeah, let's put that one in the show notes. But back to your other question about how people are feeling. I mean, before I even get to my clients, I just think about how I was feeling, right? And I always equate it to feeling like I knew that something wasn't right with our money. Like we, like it was just felt like we had less of it. Like I said, we were just taking on monthly payments. And then, you know, before we knew it, we didn't have as much money and like wiggle room in our budget. And in every single paycheck and every day, it felt like there was money coming out for some sort of payments. And so I felt like there was this cloud over my head. And then when we actually sat down and ran the numbers and figured out how much debt we were in, that's, I always tell people, like, that's when the rain cloud like opened up, and that's when it really started to rain. And it was extremely overwhelming. It was, you know, initially it was discouraging to, you know, even think about how we would get out of it. But again, when you know that storms don't last always, right? And usually at the end of a storm, something beautiful comes out of it. And so we got really serious and disciplined, and we paid off our debt. But usually that's the feeling, like it's overwhelmed. There's a sense of despair and, you know, hopelessness. I recently worked with a client who in our initial session, she thought she had close to $60,000 in debt, and it was double what she thought. So yeah, so those types of things, when you actually sit down and look at the numbers, those things can be very overwhelming. And what I like to do in my business, again, having gone through the process and working with clients and testing the process, right? I really like it to have clients dream at the beginning of our time together, right? I want us to think about what the vision is. I want you to think about what you want for your life, like that money story that we talked about. Like, what do you want your money story to be? And that gives you like a hope, right? And that gives you your why. Because then when we look at these numbers, I want you to remember that. And I want you to remember that why you're going to do the things that you're doing, and that, you know, overcoming your debt, you know, going past the feelings of overwhelm and hopelessness to get to the life that you want is going to be worth it.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that kind of can come up, I know for us, when we were paying off debt, was just the feeling of like, is this too late? Like, are we too late or too far deep into all of this to be able to get out? And just like you said, the hopelessness. And I think the dreaming part gives some sense, because honestly, 3 years of paying off debt for you and your husband is a very small amount of time in the grand scheme of life. Right. And that's the way I look at like dedication and time to one thing. Like, this small amount of time that I'm really sacrificing to give and have a life that I want eventually is really small in the grand scheme of things. And so I think it's very important to kind of have that mindset when it comes to debt. And I'm not saying this, y'all, because there's still some debt I got, but I still got student loans that I'm well, I ain't even gonna keep it. I'm gonna keep it fresh with y'all. Since they have put the hold up, we ain't paid a dang. I ain't gonna lie, but having that extra income, not paying towards loans, has been helpful. And so I just think about some of the things that, in the choices that me and my husband have made. Like when I was pregnant with my son, we made a savings account for him. We've only had to pull out of that account a couple of times, but he has a little savings. So when we have to buy clothes, if we have to pay for something for him, if I want to buy him new toys, it only comes out of that reserve. So it doesn't come out of our income. And he don't get new toys all the time, but just having the piece of, this doesn't have to come out of our area. We have saved and planned for this, which has made things so helpful.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about people who have debt and they are living on the bare minimum. They have a budget, but they don't have a lot of income, especially with inflation. We've raised our gas and our groceries a couple times in the last couple of months. What can they do to increase their income? What are some things or some strategies that they can do to even start paying off debt? Because I know that living on the bare minimum, and you have a fixed income, it's very hard to think of, how do I pay debt off when I don't make a lot of money in general? So what are some things and some strategies when you're not making a ton of money?
Yeah. So, I mean, what a time to be alive, like, if you need to make some money. Like, we are in an amazing time period where there's so much money available to us to make, right? I want to say, like, first, it's really important to start with your full-time job. So if you have a 9-to-5, if you are in a, you know, a career field, something that you study for, start there. You know, make sure that you are getting your full dollar, right? We know that there's that racial and gender wage gaps. We know that diversity and inclusion are things that are high on people's priority list in companies. And, you know, and while pay transparency isn't illegal, that is definitely something that's on employers' radar. So they're trying to be a lot more competitive and transparent when they're posting jobs and things like that. So make sure that you have open and honest conversations with your employers. Start with them. Putting yourself in a position that, you know, one, you are an asset to the organization, and then making sure you show your receipts, right? Like, we, people are out here doing your job and, like, usually somebody else's, and make sure that you are getting compensated for that. So the first thing I would tell somebody who is looking to increase their income is start with your full-time job. Mm-hmm. You know, get mentorship, talk to your supervisor, figure out what you need to do to negotiate that raise, right? Like, what performance, what key metrics do you need to hit? Like, all of those things. Start with that. But if you are feeling, you know, that you are at your max at your full-time job, or you just don't even know if you want to stay there and you're looking for some other ways to make income, there's entrepreneurship, okay? There is a side business for everything, and everybody has some sort of talent, some sort of skill, something that they can do, something that they can make that can bring them additional income. So create your own space, right? And entrepreneurship is great because you set your price. And then the last thing would be, like, the gig economy. We live in the age of Instacart, Uber Eats, Fiverr, TaskRabbit, you know, Etsy, pop-up shops, all of these different things where you could just go and make some quick money. So there's so many ways for us to be able to increase our income. And that is one of the ways that we paid off debt. My husband has always been a hard worker. When I met him, he had 6 jobs. So,
six? What was he doing? 6?
Mm-hmm. Okay, do you really want me to tell
you? I mean, you can't.
I mean,
just name a couple of them. You could just name a couple.
So he had his full-time job, which at the time he was in sales. He was selling like copiers and printers when we got married. And then he was a bouncer. He was a bouncer at a club. It's kind of funny when I say that now. He worked security at one of his other friends' companies. He worked for this music company. He was a narc. So he would go into restaurants and bars and, like, log the music that they were playing to make sure that they were paying licensing fees for, like, he has the most, like, random obscure jobs. Like, his friends either start businesses or have, like, these really random jobs and, like, try to get him in. Like, just recently, like, one of his friends tried to get him to be a bail bondsman. I'm like, bruh, like, you in your 40s now, let's just go ahead and slow down. But, like,
but no, but all of these super random. Yeah, I think that gives a perspective of just how there are options to make.
Right.
And I'll share this story. So I recently signed up for Uber Eats and DoorDash just to be, like, when I'm bored, to be honest, I just want to go make some money so I can have, like, money to eat out with. And I made $40 making, like, 6 deliveries. I think in total between both apps, I probably worked maybe around 4 hours, if I will say. So that was a lot, $40. Yeah. And I was just driving, honestly, around my house. And I think I maybe drove like 15 minutes out. But people would order, and people order food. It's just, like, wild how much, like, just I went to McDonald's one day and I went to a random, like, sub shop one day and just drop it off down the street. They're, like, nowhere from the places. And to be able to make that. So just, if you don't have a job or if you have the extra time, if you're driving home from work, and you have extra 2 hours to spare, you can literally turn the app on and make a couple, you know, extra dollars from that. So just to be able to have these things available. And actually one day I went to Popeye's to go pick up some food. And this girl said she used to do DoorDash. She said she would make close to like $400 I think I want to say like $400 to $500 a week from just doing that. So somebody that doesn't have an income can make a really good income from that. And she's only worth maybe a couple of days out of the week.
Yeah, I have a client who, you know, is in transition, you know, left his full-time job, was working on building his business up, but, you know, needed money. And just on the weekends could make, you know, between $400 and $500 doing Instacart. And then the rest of the week, he's spending time putting energy into his business to build his business up. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many ways that we could leverage these amazing, like, opportunities. And one thing that you mentioned a little bit ago was the time, right? So, like, if you just think about it, like, you know, I get it. We're adults, retired, we're working full-time jobs, we are, you know, parents, we're moms. And to just think about, like, going somewhere else and doing something extra so that you can earn money, you know, might seem hard, right? But we have to do things that are hard. We have to sacrifice a little bit of our time. We have to be committed to our goals, right? So if the goal is to get out of debt, then we have to understand that this is like this is just a season. We're going to do this while we need to. And then, you know, it's not going to be something that you're retiring from.
Yeah. And I mean, $40, I did it 2 days. I did it one evening when Elijah went to sleep. I told my husband, hey, I'm gonna drive around for a couple hours. And then one random lunchtime on a Wednesday and made $40. Mm-hmm. And just to think, like, $40 may not seem like a lot, but if you do that a couple times a week, 4 times 4 is what, 18? That's $180. Or is 4 times 4 18? I don't want to embarrass myself.
It's 60. It's okay.
Okay.
But you get the point. We get the point.
But yeah. $60 could take care of a bill. $160 could take care of X, Y, and Z. And I'm only doing that a couple hours, two times out of the week. And so it benefits long term, because you said on the weekends, I know I'm getting notifications on the weekends from DoorDash constantly of, hey, you can make extra money on the weekends because people are ordering food, they're at home and all this kind of stuff. So drop the kids off at somebody's house, work for like two to three hours and make some extra money just as an option.
Yeah.
And then some other gigs and things that you could do. Again, we're in the age of social media. They have what's called Amazon affiliates. If you just even want to share on Instagram the things you bought, people have made full-time incomes on TikTok, literally sharing the things they buy on Amazon. Yes. And so these are just small ways that you can, and you don't even have to attach your face to it. You could just, you know, these are creative ways to start making income. I get a little itty bitty check every month from Amazon from things people have bought from links that I make. And that's more than what I would normally, and it's probably like maybe $7 to $10 a month. But again, that's way more than what I had before, just honestly being open to share things.
Yes.
So it's so much more that you can get just from your time and things you already do. If you're a creative, if you're someone that makes budgets, put something on Fiverr or put something on, make a downloadable that people can buy for like $5 to $7 and just sell it. And so these are things that are very small in the grand scheme of things, but they are very, very helpful long term if you are looking to make extra money.
Yeah. And yeah, I didn't even touch on the social media, because we could go all day on how to make money on social.
Yeah. I mean, talk about some of the things you may know that I may not have mentioned.
No, I mean, again, like, you can, it's so many ways to monetize your, you know, YouTube, your podcast. There's, like you said, affiliate links and all of these different things. It's so many different ways. So,
Yeah. And even though these things may take time, there isn't, like, the sky's the limit, honestly, on what you can do. I do want you to talk really quickly about, like, the importance of, especially, like, in our age group, the importance of, like, 401ks and thinking about retirements. Because I know that that's something that can come up a lot, especially when we quit our jobs, we may cash out our 401k, or, like, thinking about those things, like, future planning. Because everybody's talking about trust fund babies and all that kind of stuff, but you gotta have a trust fund to be able to give you
babies. Hey, come on now, speak on it.
So, again, this idea of generational wealth is so trendy, which is not a bad thing. I am not against a trend, okay, baby? I know therapy has been a trend, and I am not against us prioritizing mental health, but also not living in this fantasy land of eventually we're going to be older. And there's nothing wrong with having the mindset that you will create streams of income long-term throughout your young time. But I am going to be 32 this year and baby girl is tired. So I ain't even about 40 yet, or my son might be in basketball and I'm like running behind him. So just talk a little bit about, you know, the importance of like the long-term planning, because I don't think it's like, we talk about debt, we talk about budget, but we don't really get into or have the mindset of long-term planning. I look at my mom now, who's always talking about, I wish I put more money in my 401k, I wish I put did that or planned earlier, and like why that's important. For us to think about.
I'm gonna try not to go off, because this is really one of the reasons why I started my business, Rosalind, because I know that there's so many of us like who are in like this first gen space where, you know, we're first gen high earners, we're first gen you know, healing, like you know, all of these different things where we're the first in our families to graduate college. We're the first in our families to do a lot of things, right?
Own cars. Have our
businesses,
put them in private schools or even just better education places. Like, these are all the things that we're navigating without having the real understanding of how to do it. But we're also the first generation that has been given this quick rich, get rich quick scheme on a constant basis, without really understanding the process of like what it means to build wealth.
Yes. And so, you know, because we're in this first gen space, right? Like, you know, again, generational wealth, like that's one of the hashtags that I could go in. That's one of the reasons why I have my clients start with their dream. One, I want you to really understand what is important to you and your life, right? Not what everybody else tells you to do, not society. I don't want you to be easily swayed by trends and things that are other people are doing. I really want you to be really solid in what you want. So that's why it's important for you to have your own personal vision. I'm gonna start with that. But then when we talk about generational wealth, we are in the sandwich generation, right? So we have aging parents and then we have our kids, but we have to take care of ourselves. One of the easiest and best ways to start making sure that you have the wealth that you need is through your retirement accounts, right? And so that's the 401k at your employer, your TSP, your, you know, 403b if you're working for a nonprofit. So all of these different retirement accounts that your employer is already offering you, take advantage of those, right? Do not cash them out. You can roll them over and put them into another account, like once you leave that employer, but do not cash it out, because the thing that you cannot get back is time, right? And so just like compound interest is not your friend when you're on the receiving end of it and you have debt, and you know, you're paying, it seems like you're not making any traction with your debt because you have the interest payments. It works the same way when you're investing, right? And so if you're getting interest on the money that you have in your account, that time that is in there is going to be more valuable than the actual amount that you spend. I have like all of these charts and numbers where I compare, like if you put $200 in an investment account over 30 years at a really modest interest rate, I think it was like 8%, the amount of money that you would get would be more than if you put double 10 years later. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, so it's the time that you, the earlier you start, the better off you'll be. And you can start off smaller with less and get more in the long run. So taking advantage of these 401k, like your employer-sponsored accounts, is the easiest and best way to get started when we're really having these conversations about generational wealth, especially if they're offering you a match. They are giving you free money and we don't take it. And a lot of that, you know, all of these things are connected, but some of that goes back to your system, your money management system and your budget and understanding how much money you need in your expenses. Because if you're thinking, okay, well, I can't have my employer take an extra $100 out of my account because I need to spend that within my month. We need to look at this month and see, how can I afford or how can I make room to put money in something that's going to protect my future instead of just doing that YOLO thing, right? Like, I need it now.
So that would be also an example of some retirement funds for people that are full-time entrepreneurs. Because I know, I think you told me, like, you're a single, not single mom, girl, stay-at-home mom. So, like, for us who may want to make investments, who are full-time entrepreneurs, what are some options for us as well?
Yep. So then if you, so aside from your employee-sponsored accounts, the next type of account that you want to look into is some sort of IRA. So an individual retirement account, right? So if you're an entrepreneur, they have SEP IRAs, they have simple IRAs. You could even do a solo 401k, which takes a little bit more paperwork and a little bit more setting up. And I recommend people do that with their accountants. But you can set up an IRA as a business owner for yourself by just going to any type of brokerage like Fidelity, Schwab, any of those things. Like, they will help you set it up. Those are pretty simple. You can have a Roth IRA, you can have a traditional IRA, but there's all of these retirement accounts that you can open up for yourself without having it be attached to any employer that you're making automatic contributions to, so that you're taking advantage of those sorts of things. And so those are the two things that I really like for people to start with. And then you can get into all the fun stuff. You can get into the real estate, you can get into, you know, the stocks and trading, you can get into all of these, you know, crypto, you can get into all of these other things, but it's really important to start with those types of accounts because those accounts are tax advantage. So when you're looking at your 401k, or those employee sponsored accounts, you're usually getting a tax break right now, right? So then you're able to deduct that amount on your taxes when you file each year. But if you open up a Roth IRA, or, you know, you're getting that tax benefit later. So the money that is growing tax-free. So those are the best ways to get started on the generational wealth. And then I'll say one more thing, because we talked a little bit about student loans, because this conversation is about debt, but I think it's important for us to think when we're having these conversations about generational wealth is that we're being as proactive as possible with our children as well. And so if education is something that's important to you, then it's going to be important for you to set up, you know, 529s for your kids and making sure that you're setting money aside for their future. Because at the current rate of college, I think there was a statistic by 2032, the cost of a 4-year state school would be $300,000.
Girl, you are lying to me.
Yeah, no, at the current rate. And that was actually,
school. So basically meaning the state you live in, your child going to a school that's a state school, meaning also too, not private. So they get more cut off, I think, financially because they're staying in state.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that study was done pre-pandemic. So with the current inflation rates, it probably is even higher, right? So then when you're looking at your 529s and just being as proactive as possible with your children, those are investment accounts that you can have money grow for your kids instead of it sitting in just like a traditional savings account, have money grow for your children, because if that's something that's important to you, then you want to make sure that you have those options for them as well.
Yeah. And so how much would you say would be a good monthly rate to start off with for like a 529?
So here's the other caveat, right? So I do encourage people to open up 529s for their kids. However, I want you to make sure that you put your oxygen mask on first. So we need to make sure that you have all of your stuff set up first, and then you can start to transfer money into your kids' 529s, because we also have to remember that there's scholarships, there's grants, there's ways for your children to go to college without having to pay for it. And so they can leverage those sorts of things, but you don't get that time back in your retirement account. So it's really important to make sure that you take care of yourself first. And then the second thing, so I have 3 kids, and in our state, the max that we can deduct from their 5 or on our taxes each year is $2,500 per kid. So that's how much we contribute to their 529. So $7,500 total for all 3 is in an investment account that has a pretty good rate of return. Anything else that they would need for college, they're going to have to supplement through scholarships or grants.
But thinking about that from 18 years of time, like,
right,
a good amount of time, mm-hmm, they would have, yeah, really good. I mean, just thinking about that in a general, how much is that? Like, that's really, really good to be able to know that in long term, your kids will have way more opportunity to be able to go to school and not have to pay for that. Now, even mm-hmm. talking too, about like trust funds, because I think that's a conversation that I was like, talking about trust fund babies, okay? So talking about that too, because that's a like recent thing I've heard is constantly talking about like having trust fund babies or things like that. Why, how, and what is the benefit? I see you put your head down, sis. She on camera, y'all.
Listen, okay, first of all, so I'm really big on language, okay? So like we're saying the word, like we got to make sure that we're saying it right. So we're talking about trust fund baby. Like a trust is a part of your estate plan, right? And so you have to start with that. Like you need to make, you have a will. Like then do you have a trust? Your trust is basically a legal document that just tells the court and your executors exactly how you want every single thing in your estate handled and managed after you're gone. So we do have a trust, right? And so the trust is where the money goes, and then that way the kids can have it distributed how we say. Y'all are skipping steps. Like we're skipping steps and we're talking
about when we're packed, when we're gone. So like not even really when we're talking about
being there is a living trust, but like if we haven't budgeted, if we haven't paid off our debt, if we haven't secured our savings, if we don't have retirement accounts, then what's in the trust?
Ooh.
We skip some steps. Right, we skip some steps. Like we're running, we're trying to get to the finish line, and we're not even on the track. Like we haven't even started.
So the first step is basically like book a budget, pay off your debt. Like let's talk through that, and then
because you have to have assets, mm-hmm. you have to have assets in there, right? And then if you have more debt than you have assets, then there's nothing that's in your trust.
And basic things too, y'all. Like basic things that you should think about. When I was pregnant, me and Nico both got life insurance policies. Mm-hmm. Like if something ever mm-hmm. happened to us, we always think about this when we go on dates. It's really probably not the best thing to think about, but we always think about what is something that what could we do if something happened to both of us?
Yeah.
And our son doesn't have anything. Mm-hmm. He would be able to, you know, our families wouldn't have to worry about burying us because we mm-hmm. have a life insurance policy. Those are basic things that do not cost that much to be able to get for yourself so you're covered. And so thinking about things like that are super important because anything can happen to you, but also just being mindful, like your budget, the thing you do on a monthly basis, like having a trust fund or trust isn't as important as making sure like your money on a daily and monthly basis is taken care of. Being able to increase your income and pay off debt towards things that are already taking from you on a consistent basis. If you have a car mm-hmm. and you want to pay it off early, that was something we did. We both paid our cars off early. Mm-hmm. And now we're thinking about buying a new car and it's like, we're going to buy a cash car. Like we're going to make sure before we get a car note, we can get maybe a cash car first. Because those things end up like, what would be the difference of paying $300 a month versus being able to just kind of save over time and buy another car and then be about the same amount anyway, as far as like getting to point A to point B and being able to do so. And so I think, like you said, before we get so hyped on these trends, we really need to take care of what we have in front of us first, because trends are cute, but there is real work that goes into these things and you don't want to make backward steps is what I'm hearing from you.
Basically, right? And so that's really why I started my business, right? Like generational wealth is super important to me. I think it's important for us to be able to have this education, but I also know that there's a lot of information out there. Don't get me wrong, like I feel like there's still a lot of like, and I don't like the word literacy, like nobody ever wants to say they're illiterate in any sense of the words. I don't usually call it illiterate. Girl. But, you know, I think there's still a lot of financial education that needs to happen just because, like, you know, we are still in that generation where these things weren't taught in school. We didn't really have it talked about in our homes. And so we're that weird generation. So there's still some education that needs to happen, but there's not a lack of information available because we have phones in our hands. And so the information is available to us. There's so many free resources that you can you know, learn how to save, pay off debt, do all the things, how to, you know, create a trust fund. There's resources to be able to do all of that. The problem is people aren't actually taking the steps to do it. And that's why coaching is so important for me, is because we need to get you out of the mindset of wanting to do these things and, you know, just desiring all of these things and actually doing it. Because applied knowledge is not power. Applied knowledge is power. So we have to be able to take the things that you know and actually use it. And so that's really important for my business. Like, I help people get started. Like, you gotta start before we get to, like, the ultimate goal is for us to create wealth. But how do we get to financial stability first? How do we make sure that you have a savings account that has, well, starting with your budget, right? Because your budget is your lifeline of your finances. But then how do we create a savings account that is going to protect you so that you, you know, when life happens, you don't have to take on more debt? Or, you know, if you are in between jobs or something, you have some cushion between you and life happening. And then, you know,
even thinking about all this conversation around inflation and recession, because it is super real. Like, even just the thought of, like, being a mom and not being able to find formula, like, these are hardships that come up a lot of times. And what can you do if you got to spend a little extra money on formula to be able to make sure your kids get formula? Like, those are things that come up often, but really just, again, the lifeline of what you said, like, the lifeline of your money is a budget. The lifeline of your money is having awareness, because, again, pretty much your bank account is just a spreadsheet taking money and pulling transactions, but where is it going? What happens when you swipe that card? And so I think being aware is really, really important, like you said. So kind of for you, talk about what you do, how you coach, and how you educate women in this space.
Yeah. So again, I work with mostly with mindset, right? Because whether you think you can or you think you can, you're right, right? And so I feel like there's so many times, whether we're talking about income, debt, we talk about those feelings of overwhelmed and defeated and hopelessness. In order for you to be able to take action, you have to overcome those things first. And so, and I like to have my clients have those dream conversations. I really want you to take a second and really determine what it is that you want for your life so that you can be confident and firm in that. So when we're making your plan, it's something that makes sense for you in your life. But yeah, I coach my clients really around changing their relationship with money and shedding that old inherited money story that they've, you know, gotten from their families or society, and transitioning into something that really is helpful and productive for them. Until you change your relationship with money, how you feel about money, like, you know, I was in a toxic relationship with money. Okay. Like, I would treat money like it was anything. Like, you can come and you can go. Like, I didn't care about it. I didn't respect it. Right. And so, changing how we treat our money, that is real abundance. Everybody talks about, like, the abundance lifestyle. That's another thing that's trendy for people to talk about, is the abundance lifestyle. But I want showing people that abundance starts now where you are, and then it just kind of grows from there. So even in, like, you know, if you're not in the income that level that you're at, that you want to be at, how can you show gratitude for where you are right now? And one of the best ways to do that is to be intentional with your money. And being intentional with your money means you have some sort of system and plan in place for it. So that's mainly what I help clients with, is really just shedding their old money stories, shedding the toxic traits and habits and patterns that they have with money, so that they can create, you know, a really solid foundation so that they can build wealth on it.
Yeah,
exactly. But again, you have to get started.
Yeah. So where can people find you if they're interested in coaching? What can some of the programs you have and be a part of?
Yeah, so thank you. So you can find me at The Lotus Legacy. That's my main platform. Instagram, that's my main platform. I love talking to people in the DM. So if you tell me that you heard me on this podcast and just shoot me a DM, like, I would love that. I'm a real person. I'll talk back to you. I work with clients in two different ways. So group settings and then in one-on-ones. So in the one-on-ones, those are like a crash course of what I do. And it's really for people who are in some sort of almost like crisis mode, right? Like I need to figure out how to get this money together like right now. Because those are like an intensive session where we're just going through all of the things that we would go through in the group, but in a really consolidated format. And that program is really, I vet that program really well, because that program is for people who take action, who are action oriented. So you can handle the plan. You just need to help. You need help creating the plan. And then I do group coaching as well. Mama's Master of Money is my group coaching program. And that's when we really take the time to go through the growth framework, which is helping you goal plan, recognize, you know, where you are financially and with your current money mindset, outline everything that we need to do, and then we get to work. So the next cohort for that will be starting in September. But if you're interested, you can, you know, get on the wait list so that you can join, because if you're tired of, you know, feeling overwhelmed and feeling helpless and all of these things with your money, and you know you want to get to wealth, but you don't know how to get started, then this program is perfect for you.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, y'all. Well, I'm going to leave all Tiffany's information in the show notes. If you are interested in getting in contact with her, definitely reach out. And I hope that you enjoyed part one and part two of this podcast. And I will love to see y'all next week. And we'll talk soon. So bye.